Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Monday edition of Preds Insiders here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth in studio with you, and Robbie Stanley of Robbie and Rex Road, weekdays 6 to 10 on ESPN 102.5 The Game and NHL.com. Robbie, how we doing?
Doing wonderful, my man. How are you?
Good. Good to have you back on the show as the Preds have now played five games in this unique season. Before we get into the games in Dallas over the weekend, a pair of losses against the Stars, what have been your thoughts, not only with the Preds, but the rest of the NHL, in these this different-looking schedule where there are a lot of two-game sets, even with some of the Canadian teams in the North Division? You know, Ottawa starts a three-game set in Vancouver tonight, almost like a baseball series. What have been kind of your thoughts on how this schedule has played out so far?
Honestly, I love it. I really do. Like, I don't know if you should do this every year, but more of the back-to-back games against the same team, whether it's in consecutive days or, you know, taking a day or two off in between the games, I think it's awesome. I mean, I think there's animosity there. The league as a whole right now, it's off to, I think, a little bit of a different start. Scoring is really up, and Stars coach Rick Bowness was talking about that yesterday. I mean, it's going to take teams probably a month or so to get into the flow of things, and you see more of kind of a natural flow of offensively, the way games are going, the way games are called, all sorts of things. But I think it's been good so far, and you know, obviously there have been some COVID issues along the way. You would anticipate that happening probably a little bit more as the season goes on here. But all in all, I've been happy with the quality of play. To me, anytime the offense is trending upward, that's good for me. I'm cool with offense in the NHL, and I do. I really like the setup of playing the same team twice in a row, three times in a row, whatever the case may be. And again, you don't need to make that an everyday thing when things get back to normal, but I would love to see more of it because I think the animosity it creates, just the entertainment it creates, I think is awesome. So I am all for it.
Well, I'm specifically enjoying the North Division games.
Yeah.
With all the Canadian teams, because there's something a little different about that division versus the other three, with the American teams in the other three divisions. For instance, you know, like I said, Ottawa at Vancouver tonight, it's the start of a three-game set. You're having teams sometimes play each other four consecutive games. The Oilers last night, the Oilers and Jets had a just miraculous game where the Oilers win it in the last second, and they go back at it tomorrow night in the same barn. I'm really enjoying, like you, these early season two-game sets. I do think there will be some of these sprinkled in throughout a season. For instance, if the Preds are scheduled to play the California teams twice in a season, why not just spend a week and a half out there?
Yeah.
Play two against the Ducks, two against the Kings, two against the Sharks, and you're making one trip to California for the season and not two trips to California for the season, or Western Canada. I think this is something that they could weave in. You can't do it the entire season, obviously, especially if you want to have every single team come into Nashville or every other team's barn throughout the season. It's just not feasible to do that. But I am really enjoying not only the two-game sets, but the brand of hockey we're seeing. It's not perfect, like you said. It's going to take a while for these teams to get up to speed. But there have been a lot of fun games so far in this NHL season. Two of them that weren't that fun in this early season for the National Hockey League were the last two that the Preds played in Dallas Friday night, getting their doors blown off 7-0. And then last night, losing 3-2, couldn't muster much of offense until it was too late there in the third period. Let's start with Friday night, because Friday night, Robbie, I thought the Preds played really well in the first period. They looked like the better team. Dallas looked like the team that was playing their first game of a new season with barely any training camp. And then it was a parade to the penalty box in the second period for the Preds. And the Stars were basically automatic on the power play. And that night they score 5 power play goals en route to a 7-0 victory. What did you make of what happened Friday night?
It was interesting because I thought the first period was really a carryover from the Carolina game. I thought the Preds got a ton of chances, a ton of looks, and they couldn't finish. I mean, I thought the best game of the season they've played so far was the Carolina game, and that was the first game they lost. I thought they were awesome in that game, and they couldn't finish. And it was similar to that in the first period against the Stars. They had chances. I mean, Duchesne and Granlund had a couple right off the bat in that game that were right around the net, right in front of the net, and they just couldn't convert on those chances. And then you get to the second period, and as you said, it's a parade to the penalty box, and it wasn't one-sided. I mean, the Predators, they had their chances on the power play too, but everything that Dallas touched seemed to go in the net. I mean, there were deflections. I mean, there was basically a slam dunk play from Radulov coming behind the net to Pavelski. I mean, everything that could go wrong on the penalty kill went wrong. You would like to see your goaltender make some saves in that situation too. I didn't think Saros had a good night. Rene comes in eventually in that game. But it was just one of those games where 5-on-5, I actually think the Predators played well. As a matter of fact, I thought the Predators played better 5-on-5 in the 7-0 loss than they did last night in the 3-2 loss to
Dallas.
Totally agree. I thought they were pretty good in that area. It's, you know, a lot of fans hear that and roll their eyes when the final score is 7-0. And trust me, I understand. But it was just a disaster on the penalty kill. And it's one of those ones where it left me after the game thinking, all right, like, what do you do with a game like this? Is this something that you just throw in the trash and say, all right, it was weird. I mean, you've had five goals in a game. Obviously, that doesn't happen very often on the penalty kill. Do you just throw it away? What do you take from it? And the theme after was, you know, a lot of tip plays, a lot of redirections, stuff like that that you've got to fix. That's something that happens sometimes. Again, you'd like to see your goaltender save a few of those, but a lot of them were just, you know, yeah, Radulov swatting a puck out of midair. You got Pavelski one going on off his skate. I mean, a lot of weird bounces in that game. And I wondered, you know, how would the Predators respond the next game? As we found out, not too well on the penalty kill the next game either.
Yeah, well, Friday night, we're harping on the penalty kill, but the power play, 0-for-5, yeah. And they give up a shorthanded goal at the end of the second period to Esa Lindell, which kind of put the cherry on top of...
It's unacceptable.
For the Stars, a great second period. For the Preds, a miserable second period. It reminded me of some of the games that we saw in the last couple of years where one thing went wrong and it just kind of snowballed. And also from a power play or penalty kill standpoint, it reminded me of a game in Toronto like, I don't know, 10 years ago where the Leafs scored like 5 power play goals in the second period. And it was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
But then they follow it up last night by giving up 3 more power play goals to the Stars in the 3-2 loss. The Preds went over 20 minutes without a shot on goal in the middle of that game. I believe with like 7 or 8 minutes left in the second period, the Preds still had 4 shots on goal for the game.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, are you eventually going to muster some offense here? Like, I would agree with you that the Preds last night were worse 5-on-5 than they were Friday night, which is hard to believe in a 7-0 loss versus a 1-goal loss.
Yeah.
But last night, it felt like they were having such a hard time generating anything offensively. And I don't know how much of that is Dallas and the way that they are known to play. And when the Dallas is on their A game, they can, you know, they can smother the opposition. And I don't know how much of it is the Preds, where the only forward right now finishing with any sort of consistency, and yes, it's only 5 games, but Philip Forsberg, 4 goals in 5 games,
yep.
You're not getting any of your other key forwards to finish on some of these opportunities they're getting.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. And this is the same old story that we've talked about. Look, I'll say this. I like a lot of what I've seen from Arvidsson and Duchesne and Johansson, but the production's not good enough. Like, it's got to be better. I mean, you're talking about between Duchesne and Johansson, a combined 4 points in 5 games, 2 assists. Neither one of them have scored yet. And look, you look at the heat maps, all these analytics, everything you want to look at, Johansson and Duchesne are playing great in that area. Statistically, they're doing very well. And maybe it is as simple as sticking with the process and hoping you break through and the goals come in bunches at some point and the offense takes off. But man, I'm tired of having this discussion about these 4. I mean, you've got to have more consistent production. And if you're not going to get it, you got to move on. Like, there's something you got to do. So This is a huge stretch for those four specifically. As you said, Forsberg, he's off to a great start. He's got four goals. I think he could probably have a couple more in his belt based on the way that he's played and how dangerous I think he's been. But at the end of the day, nobody really cares about the chances you're generating or nobody really cares about the analytics you're putting up. It's about the production. Can you finish? And that has been the biggest problem for the Predators. You talked about it on the power play. There's been a ton of looks on the power play. You got to finish. 5-on-5, Johansson's had a ton of looks. He's got to finish. Duchesne, same thing. So this is a consistent problem. This has been that way before with this group. They've got to find a way to bear down and finish because let's be honest here. I mean, we've talked about it here on the show. The offense, it's going to be a challenge this year. I don't feel great about the depth of this team offensively. We knew that heading into the season. You got to have good special teams. You can't get blitzed on the penalty kill like they did. And your power play has got to be dangerous for you at some point. So far, it hasn't been. And 5-on-5, you're not finishing with any degree of consistency whatsoever outside of Forsberg. So that's a big challenge for John Hines and company to unlock that out of his group because if you can't do it, it's going to be a long year because offensively, I just don't know if this team has what it takes to keep up based on what they're going to have to do from a consistency standpoint.
So in Dallas, in the two games, the power play goes 1-for-9 and allows a shorthanded goal. And the penalty kill allows 8 power play goals in two games, 8 power play goals on 12 opportunities for the Dallas Stars. This just in, the Chicago Blackhawks have a pretty good power play, and they Preds take on the Hawks in the next two games on home ice. So they need to figure something out before 7 o'clock tomorrow with that penalty kill, or we could be having a similar conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Chicago. Jonathan Toews is not a part of things right now. Their roster, it's not good. I mean, they don't have a good roster. A lot of the players that have been around from the championship days are gone. Some of the players that are still there from the championship days are not the same player as they used to be. Duncan Keith is not the same guy as he used to be. So the goaltending, I think, is a disaster for that team. They're not good. But they do have Patrick Kane, and that guy's pretty good. And they do have Alex DeBrincat, and that guy's pretty good. And, you know, they've got weapons offensively. So, look, if you're a Preds fan and you look at the way things went in Dallas, you can view it a couple of different ways. You can view it as, man, this is going to be a gigantic problem all year long. That penalty kill is awful. Or you could view it as, all right, I mean, sometimes things happen. You run into a situation where it's an absolute disaster. It happened twice in a row. Maybe Dallas's power play is just humming along right now, and you try to fix it moving forward. But if we have, you know, a similar conversation Tuesday, Wednesday night when Chicago comes rolling through here and they light up the Predators for 3-4 power play goals during that span, I would be very concerned about that penalty kill group moving forward.
Well, this, if there was ever an opportunity for the Preds to have a get-right series, it's this one. Yes, the Blackhawks just won two games at home against the Red Wings. Must I remind you, it is the Red Wings. Home teams have been really good this season. The Blackhawks on the road looked awful. They come back home. They looked like a juggernaut. The Red Wings looked fine at home, and they looked awful in Chicago. If there was ever a time for the Preds to just completely discard what happened over the weekend, this is the time because after Chicago, you have a two-game series against Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay has looked pretty darn good early in the season when they've been able to play. But you have to get at least 3 points out of these next two games. After losing 3 in a row in a shortened season, I mean, 3 losses in a row in a 56-game season is essentially like 4 losses in a row in an 82-game season. They have to stop the bleeding. And if they can win each of the next two games, and I get it, it's going to be tough to sweep two-game sets throughout the season. But you have to take advantage of a Chicago team that is very top-heavy with their skill. They have zero experience between the pipes, really.
Yeah.
And you have to get at least some sort of confidence going with your best players. I mean, you're looking at Duchesne. You're looking at Johansson. Arvidsson, I mean, 5 points in 5 games, hard to get on him. But he is a part of the forwards that just need to start finishing with a more consistent basis. So we'll get to those Stars here in a minute. There are a couple tidbits that I want to pass along, a couple of news items. First of all, the Carolina game that was postponed last week has been rescheduled for Tuesday, March 2nd at 7 o'clock. So a normal start time that Tuesday night for Preds-Canes here at Bridgestone Arena. That will be Tuesday, March 2nd from the game originally scheduled for January 19th. And then some troubling news coming from the NHL and NHLPA announcing that goaltender Connor Ingram will be away from the Nashville Predators while voluntarily taking part in the NHL-NHLPA Player Assistance Program. So, some troubling news there for a key member of the Nashville Predators when you think of, okay, what happens if Rene or Saros go down with an injury or get placed on the COVID list? Connor Ingram has been someone that everybody has been keeping an eye on, thinking that he's going to get some time this season, but this news, not so good.
Yeah, and look, obviously you don't know what the specifics are, and there's probably not going to be any comment on that as they move forward here, but it's never a good sign when a player goes into that program. And obviously the first thing you do is you wish Connor Ingram the best, obviously struggling with something off the ice. So hopefully he gets better in that regard and is able to return as soon as possible. But, I mean, you do also have to look at it, especially in this year, from a multitude of different standpoints. I mean, you've got your normal risk of injury, which I do think is heightened this year based on the condensed schedule and how much action these players are seeing, especially early on. But also, like you said, the COVID part of this as well. And Connor Ingram, I was convinced at some point this year, probably was going to get a look, whether due to injury or due to COVID. And, you know, the question now becomes, all right, what do you do now if he's not available for you? And one of those two guys goes down. So wish the best to Connor Ingram. Hopefully he's back as soon as possible. And hopefully for the Predators' sake, they're not put in that situation. But if they are, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it and what they do.
Coming up next, some stars are producing, some aren't. We'll address all of that coming up next here on Preds Insiders. He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. And you're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth, joined in studio by Robbie Stanley this evening. Robbie is the co-host of Robbie and Rex Road, weekday mornings, 6 to 10 a.m. here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and is the Nashville Predators correspondent for NHL.com. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice for all your dental and sleep apnea needs. Visit KellyERice.com. So, Robbie, we spent last segment harping on the two losses that the Predators suffered in Dallas, coming away with 0 points of a possible four out of that two-game set in Big D. Now focused on the Chicago Blackhawks. Tomorrow night, Tuesday night, pregame at 6, faceoff at 7 on 102.5, and then Wednesday night, with it being national TV, a special start time of 6:30 puck drop. So our pregame coverage here on 102.5 The Game will start at 5:30. As the Preds have a back-to-back against Chicago. Robbie, when you look at the stars of this team, you mentioned Johansson and Duchesne, only 2 assists each through 5 games. Philip Forsberg has been producing. Arvidsson, too. Arvidsson has 5 points in 5 games. But Johansson and Duchesne, you want to see them get going. You also want to see Roman Josi get going.
Yep.
I mean, Roman Josi, 1 point in 5 games. It hasn't looked like he has been as involved with puck possession and carrying the offense, and we expected that, but I haven't really noticed Roman Josi even close to the extent that we've noticed him in recent years from an offensive standpoint.
Especially carrying the puck through the neutral zone. I mean, that's been his bread and butter offensively for a long time. He's the best in the league at it. You look at the analytics, quite frankly, it's not close between him and the next defenseman. There hadn't been as much of that in my mind. Like, some of the stats still look great. Like, you know, his Corsi percentage, he's 58.5. That's really good. Without going too deep in the weeds on it, fancy stats and analytics and all that, he's still playing well. Still, I think, has been pretty good defensively for the most part, but not taking over offensively like we saw him do at times last year. And look, some of that, I think, is positive. Like, you don't want Roman Josi having to be the one that steps his foot on the gas all the time and take over offensively. But when you're not scoring and you're struggling to finish like this team has been, he's obviously shown that he can be a huge part of that and carry the team offensively at times. I think a big part of it's the power play. You've got to get more production on the power play. I mean, the number one unit has been Duchesne, Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson, and Josi all season long. It's got to be better.
There is no excuse why that fivesome cannot be one of the most productive power play units in the entire league.
It's got to be better. It's got to be better, and Yossi's a part of that. And look, I do think there are times where he needs to have the puck on his stick coming through the zone. I realize in this system you want to get the puck up to the forwards as quickly as possible. I'm all for that. I think that works. I think they got in a habit last year under Peter Laviolette of just saying, all right, Roman, go do it. We'll sit here and follow behind and trail and see what happens when you get done trying to go 1-on-3. I think that happens way too much. But I do think there is involvement that he needs to have with the puck on his stick. And Terry Crist was talking about this on the broadcast, and they've done this a few times already, which just drives me nuts. And it's the old neutral zone drop on the power play. You know, Yossi's got it. He's coming up with a head of steam. He drops it back. And, you know, Johansson's there, Arvidsson's there, Duchesne's there, and they enter the zone. To me, the best guy they have entering the zone is Roman Yossi. And that needs to be something where he's quarterbacking your power play. He's got the puck on his stick at all times. So I get it. I mean, a lot of attention is going to be placed on Duchesne and Johansson, deservedly so. Like I said before, it's time for those guys to finish. Chances are great. That's fine. You're not getting paid for chances. You're getting paid to finish and have production. Roman Yossi had a great year last year, obviously won the Norris Trophy. It's very hard to criticize him based on what he's done. But I do think there's another level that he needs to reach offensively. That's the bar that he's set for himself, and he's got to find a way to get there. So, you know, of the guys that we're talking about, the guy that by far I have the most confidence to be productive and to start to produce is Roman Yossi, because I've seen him do it his entire career. But that's got to start happening in a hurry because of what we talked about earlier. I'm just not sure this team has enough offensively if he's not firing on all cylinders.
Well, we've talked throughout the offseason about how the system change to John Hines' system doesn't cater to the defenseman having the puck on their stick as much. Do you feel like John Hines needs to make an exception to that system when it comes to Roman Yossi, knowing how vital it can be to this team's offense and the production of the offense when Roman Yossi's the one, you know, being the straw that stirs the drink and, you know, dominating possession even in the offensive zone?
To a point, yeah. I mean, look, I think you've got to give him the green light. I think he's good enough to have earned the green light while also having a conversation with him and saying, look, you got to pick your spots. When the time is there, you take it, you go with it, don't hesitate and go. I do think at times Roman last year was maybe guilty of just taking it himself anyway and not looking to get the puck up the ice and not looking to push the play offensively that way. And again, he was so great last year, it's hard to blame him. But in a perfect world, you do want the transition game to operate smoothly where you're just moving that puck so quick. I mean, the Carolina game is a perfect example of that. I think just go back and watch some of those plays. You know, Yossi goes to Arvidsson across the middle. Arvidsson misses the net. That puck is up the ice before you can even snap your fingers, and it's a two-on-one the other way. I mean, the transition, if you can move the puck quickly, works, and that's what John Hines is searching for. You've also got to have the personnel to do it. I think they do at times, but Yossi's a big part of that. I would give him the green light with the understanding of you got to pick your spots. When it's there, you take it. When it's not, you get that puck out of your stick or off your stick as quickly as you possibly can and try to play with speed. I thought they did a great job of that through the first three games. They were moving fast. They were playing fast, making quick, good decisions with the puck. Obviously, that did not happen yesterday's game. I thought 5-on-5, they were still doing that to a certain degree on Friday against Dallas. They've got to get back to that this week against Chicago.
Yeah, Philip Forsberg with 4 goals in 5 games. He can't be the only one producing on offense. Now, looking between the pipes, UC Saros, the first 2 games against Columbus, thought he was really stinking good. And then these 2 games against Dallas, I was not impressed really one bit with UC Saros in these 2 games. And I get it. He's in an unfavorable position when the penalty kill in front of him is playing as poorly as it has and you're shorthanded a lot. But there was one goal that he allowed last night. Was it the second one?
Second one.
The second one where he got 100% of the puck and it still trickled through and across the goal line.
It was Roope Hintz, yeah.
That can't happen. And he's looked pretty leaky in the last 2 games. What have you made of UC Saros' start to the season?
Well, I agree. I thought the first 2 games he was outstanding. I thought he played really well. And then I think he's been very average to below average in the following 2 games. And this is what kind of drives me nuts about Twitter sometimes is, well, I mean, look at the team in front of him. They're not playing well. That's okay. two things can be true at the same time. That your team could not be playing well in front of you, and you also need your goaltender to make some saves for you when he's not expected to. Pekka did that for years, and I realize that's a pretty high standard to hold yourself to, but that's what you're looking to see out of Saros. Can he do that? Can he be that next guy that takes over the franchise position? So, you know, I look back to that first game. There's a play in particular where the puck's on his stick behind the net, and Radulov's coming. Like, you can see him coming, and he just kind of takes his time. Puck gets knocked off his stick, and all of a sudden it's in the back of the net 5 seconds later. It's just things like that. A little bit quicker decision-making, a little bit more positionally sound on some of these, and maybe you're in a position to stop a tip or two in that first game. So I've been underwhelmed the last couple of games.
But is it with UC Saros as simple as however the team plays in front of him is how well he's going to play? Because when in recent years, when the team has played well in front of him, remember when he started, believe it would have been the either the 16-17 season or the 17-18 season, he was really not good.
Yeah.
In like the first 2 months. I think this was the 17-18. And Peter Laviolette and his and Saros' teammates came out and said, we have to make a concerted effort to play better in front of Saros like we do in front of Pekka Rinne.
Right.
And once they started doing that, you saw UC Saros starting to have a lot of success. The first two games against Columbus, thought the team played, especially as those games went along, a lot better in front of him. And I didn't think they played all that well in front of him in these last two games, and he gave up those goals. But in the first two games, when they played better, he looked pretty awesome. Is it as simple that we now have enough evidence of UC Saros, 123 games into his NHL career, that that just might be the case?
Well, I think so. And look, I think you can say that about a lot of goalies in the league, but the question you're trying to answer with Saros is, can he be that franchise guy?
And can he steal you games?
Can he steal you games
where you're playing like crap in front of him?
Exactly. And so far, I think the answer has been no, with some rare exceptions. I mean, it's not like he's never done it before when they haven't been playing well in front of him and he's stolen games. I think he has. But, you know, he's a good NHL goaltender. I think we've established that at this point. He's a good player. I think he's going to be in the league for a long time. But that's not the question the Predators are trying to answer. They know that. They're trying to determine, can he be the next guy after Pekka Rinne is gone? And quite frankly, I mean, the jury is still out right now. I agree with you. You need to see more efforts from him when you don't have your best game in front of him, that he just steals you games. And look, there's a natural disadvantage that he's got. His height is a problem. And it's not unique to him. We've seen a trend in the league the last 10, 15 years, really started by Pekka in some degree, where you're drafting bigger goalies and they're taking up more of the net. And a couple of those tips, where'd they go over the other night? Right over his shoulder, right under the crossbar. I mean, that is a weakness that he has that's going to be very difficult to overcome. But he makes up for it oftentimes with his athleticism and his movement. And he's stolen some games. He just has not done that anywhere near often enough if you're the Predators. I think at this point to feel great that he's your guy moving forward. Now, there's still time. He's 25 years old. There's still a lot of work left to do. And like I said, I think he's established himself that he's a good goalie. Can he be a great goalie? That's the question they have to answer. And if the answer is no at the end of this year, then you have to start looking down the pipeline and figure out what you got there.
And I have to think some uncertainty around UC Saros is a reason why they went goalie in the first round in this past draft with Askarov.
Yeah.
And the fact that Askarov is potentially this franchise goaltender a la Carey Price in Montreal, and you see a lot of Jekyll and Hyde out of UC Saros, but I wonder if that's because we see a lot of Jekyll and Hyde out of this team in front of him. So something to monitor moving forward with UC Saros. I would assume in these two games against Chicago, they'll split.
That would be my guess.
One game it's Saros and one game it's Rinne. I think it's as simple as that, right?
I agree.
So, again, two big games for the Preds against Chicago. And one thing that I do want to get to before we address the biggest news in the NHL this weekend is the fact that John Hines changed up his lines.
Nice.
Last night with putting Forsberg with Duchesne and Cunnan and then Granlund with Johansson and Arvidsson. This was midway through the game that he made this change. And John Hines was asked after the game about that change by Justin Bradford, our good friend. And here was that question and answer.
Hi, John. So in the third period, saw a change with Forsberg and Granlund switching lines there, a little bit more energy on the ice. Is that what you're going for? And what did you like out there between those two guys switching up their lines?
Yeah, you know, it did. I thought it created a little bit of energy, just a little bit of a different look in the game. It was for a few shifts, and it seemed like when we put Forsberg with Duchesne and Cutting, that line started going a little bit. And obviously, I thought Johansson's line would play very well with Granlund and Arvidsson there later. So it was just a flip for a little bit of a different look later in the game, and I thought both lines responded.
That was John Hines after the game. Do you think it stays that way for Chicago?
I think so. I mean, look, at some point, that Johansson line's got to produce, and right now, they're not. I mean, Forsberg is scoring goals. A lot of them have come either on a breakaway or in a power play situation. Like, I think...
Or off the rush.
I mean, how many times are you seeing sustained zone time where that line is moving, they're constantly on the attack, like we know they can be when they're playing really well? I haven't seen a ton of that this year. Not to say that they played poorly, because I don't think they've played poorly, but there's still another level for that line to reach. In this year, more than any other year, you can't wait around forever on that to happen. Conversely, I like a lot of what I've seen from Duchesne's line. The finish hasn't been there. Cunning's got a couple of goals. Duchesne's had a lot of chances, no finish so far. Granlund, him and Duchesne had a lot of looks early on Friday night. They just couldn't find the back of the net. You make the switch last night. Forsberg and Duchesne, they've played well together. I mean, you look at their history, albeit brief, they've played pretty well together. I'm interested to see, maybe that unlocks Duchesne a little bit on the score sheet. Granlund, Arvidsson together. I worry about the size or lack thereof on that line. You've got Johansson. And we've seen it. When Forsberg's taken off his line, he's just not the same guy. He's not as productive. So it's a tough balancing act if you're John Hines. But like I said, I mean, this is on those two guys specifically, Johansson and Duchesne, to force your way into production and to force your way into conversation. If you want to keep your line together, you got to play better. You got to put the puck in the back of the net. So I'm interested to see what the patience level is like with this switch. I would probably start with Forsberg and Duchesne, just see what you got. I liked a little bit of what I saw, and it's tough to really evaluate in the third period of a game where you're down two goals and you're throwing everything you got at the other team. And great tip by Granlund on a shot to the net by Arvidsson. But you've got to find a way to get these top two centermen unlocked from a production standpoint. It wasn't happening with Johansson's line with Forsberg and Arvidsson consistently enough. And like I said, this season of all season, you cannot just wait around and expect it to magically start happening. You just don't have time for it in a season like this.
I completely agree. So I would almost expect there to be a different look with the forward lines, maybe starting with those two lines and the change that John Hines made. Because two goals in the last two games against Dallas, you had trouble generating offense before that change that he made last night during that game against Dallas. So something also to keep an eye on moving forward with the Nashville Predators. So before I let you go, Robbie, there was a big trade in the National Hockey League over the weekend. Everything was starting to really bubble to the surface with Pierre-Luc Dubois in Columbus, where his last shift as a Blue Jacket, it looked like he wanted no part of being on the ice. And then John Tortorella sits him for the rest of that game against Tampa Bay. This was Thursday night. And then by Saturday morning, Pierre-Luc Dubois is gone, traded along with a third-round pick to Winnipeg in exchange for Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic. Now, it's interesting the impact of this on the Preds, because in the short term, Patrick Laine and Roslovic now re-entered the division
right, as
members of the Blue Jackets, whereas Dubois goes to the Jets, and he will impact the Predators more long-term within the division with this temporary realignment. Who do you think won that trade?
You know, this is interesting because I've always been a guy, and we've talked about it here on the show before. Patrick Laine, to me, has been underwhelming since he came in the league. He's got a great shot, obviously a very gifted goal scorer. To me, he leaves a lot to be desired in pretty much every other aspect of the game. I think he's a great shooter. I think he's a huge weapon on the power play, as we've seen already this year. I mean, he's got the ability to just rope some shots, and I love that about him. I still think there is a lot of work to do away from the puck and a lot of work to do in his own zone. And you're going to a coach in John Tortorella that if you're not playing that way, good luck. I mean, it's going to be a rough ride. So I'm very fascinated to see how that part of it works out. I got to tell you, I've been very unimpressed with the way Pierre-Luc Dubois handled all this. And it's weird. You just signed a contract extension. You just signed a two-year deal. And then all of a sudden you want out. You've talked with your team about it. Apparently the reasons for you wanting out, you never really quite communicated with the team. So, look, that wasn't going to end well. John Tortorella talked about it a couple of weeks ago about how the leash was going to be short. And then you go out and you see the shift that you referenced, where if you're interested in finding it, you can find it on Twitter. I mean, it's pathetic. It was a pathetic shift from Pierre-Luc Dubois. It looked like he didn't even want to be on the ice, didn't want to be touched, certainly wasn't engaged in the battle along the boards. And that's just, like I said, if you got John Tortorella, that ain't going to fly.
Right.
And that situation was getting real close to being very, very ugly. And I think the Blue Jackets realized that and pulled the trigger on the trade. So I think Dubois is a great player. He's 22 years old. He's still got a lot to learn. You're talking about a guy that put up 61 points a couple years ago, 27 goals. I like the talent. But I got to tell you, if that's what he brings to the table when things get hard and he doesn't want to be there, what's this going to look like in Winnipeg? It's not like Winnipeg is this Shangri-La destination for free agent. Like, I want to go play in Winnipeg because it's real cold there and I have nothing to do. Like, I'm very interested to see how this plays out for both teams and how many people have wanted to stay in Columbus long term. What's Patrick Laine's outlook right now? This is, to me, a very, very risky proposition for both, and I'm not sure I love either situation.
Robbie Stanley, you can catch his work on Robbie and Rex Road weekday mornings, 6 to 10 a.m. here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and NHL.com. Robbie, thank you as always.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to continue this discussion over the Pierre-Luc Dubois for Patrick Laine trade coming up next here on Preds Insiders with ESPN's Greg Wyshynski. We'll go around the NHL with him and really focus on this big trade that went down over the weekend. That's coming up next here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show here, Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth with you this evening. Last segment got into the Columbus-Winnipeg trade, where Pierre-Luc Dubois and a third-round pick go to Winnipeg in exchange for Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic. And joining us now to get more insight on that trade and the aftermath of everything that went down specifically in Columbus is ESPN's Greg Wyshynski. Quite the hockey trade, as we would call it, early in the season.
Well, it's a hockey trade, but I think more specifically it's an NHL trade. I mean, you know, we cast a jealous eye at the NBA, where you see these trades for megastars and, you know, it's got a thousand different moving pieces to make it work. And then in the NHL, we get a trade and it's basically like, this guy is unhappy. These two guys are unhappy. Let's trade them for each other and be done with it. And that's kind of how NHL trades sometimes work. But you know, like you said, it was a higher caliber of prestige player involved in this trade going both ways. I think the common wisdom on at least the Patrick Laine side of the thing was the Jets are probably going to get futures for him if and when they traded him. So to see two top six forwards swap for each other, and then you throw in another guy that's a pretty good NHL player as well, was still pretty exhilarating, even if it was to be a little bit predictable.
Greg Wyshynski on the line with us. So when that trade happened, I was pretty taken aback that those two players were indeed traded for each other. And then I quickly thought, oh, Patrick Laine and John Tortorella together. How do you feel like that's going to work out between those two?
Well, it should be interesting. I mean, there is evidence in the past of Laine-type players not exactly meshing with what Tortorella likes to see from his team. You know, Marian Gaborik is a good example who played for Torts in New York. Has taken to social media to let his feelings be known as far as what causes a breakup like this with a top-flight offensive player. But, you know, the thing about Tortorella, and this is important, and it's something that Dubois said in his media availability with the Jets recently, you know, there's going to be one of two things that happen. It's either going to be that you end up really despising playing for the guy. You think he's unfair to you. He's, you know, doesn't, you know, I don't want to say abusive, but he's, you know, very rigid with you with his criticism and things like that. Or you're going to see him as Dubois saw him, which is, a real disciplinarian, stern drill sergeant type guy who's just trying to make you a better player. So while the Dubois thing, you know, I think was pinned on Tortorella in a lot of ways, if you listen to the man himself, that wasn't the reason why he was seeking to leave Columbus. And listen, you know, Patrick Laine is an incredible offensive player. I mean, one of the most gifted goal scorers we've seen come down the pike since Ovechkin came into the league. But he's not a complete player in any sense. He's a defensive liability. He still has to round out his game. It reminds me of sort of early years Vladimir Tarasenko, where he was an incredibly gifted offensive player, but needed the structure of the Blues and other, you know, coaching acumen to make him a more complete player. And maybe that's what ends up happening with Laine in Columbus.
So there was a lot made in the final days of Dubois being a Columbus Blue Jacket of what transpired, especially last Thursday night in Columbus's game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, where Dubois has this final shift where he's just kind of coasting around, doesn't have any interest in, you know, going into any sort of puck battle. And that was it. And Tortorella benches him for the rest of the game. Tortorella sounds off with the media. How do you feel like Tortorella handled the final days of Dubois being in Columbus?
I think he handled it as best could be expected. I mean, you know, Dubois basically quit on the team. I mean, he was lollygagging out there. He wasn't giving any effort. It was clear that he had decided that this was an untenable situation for him, and he had requested a trade. It had not been granted, and he wasn't going to give the commiserate effort until he was out of Columbus. And if you're the coach, you have only one thing that you can do there, which is to take him off the ice. And, you know, obviously there's an ancillary benefit to Tortorella in the sense that you could use him as an example. If you don't give the proper effort, it doesn't matter if you are somebody who gets top unit power play time, you're going to be sitting on the pine. And he would have been a healthy scratch on Saturday were it not for the trade. So I can't blame Tortorella for any of this. I mean, he benched him for a stretch on a Monday. It didn't really do much of anything because then the next game, you know, Dubois was even more disconnected and had to sit for, you know, basically over two periods of play. So, I mean, I think that's on the player. And I know there's been some criticism of that, and I think that you can criticize Dubois and maybe a little bit of immaturity there insofar as how to handle yourself as a professional. I mean, I think everybody's been in a situation work-wise where you haven't been necessarily happy, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you just kind of like don't punch the clock, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that comes with maturity, but as far as the way Torts handled it, I think that's the only way that he could handle it with the cards that Dubois dealt him.
I honestly, if I was John Tortorella, would have just completely taken Dubois off the bench and put him in the locker room for the rest of the game, especially the second and third periods. If he was truly done, I would not have let Dubois just go back out there because it just became this an even bigger story. Like, I just don't think Tortorella, and it's hard to think that I'm about to say this, I don't think Tortorella did enough with this, where I would have been so furious with how Dubois skated on that last shift that I would have said, dude, get out. You're never skating another second for this team.
That's a good point. And you know, this is where I plead ignorance of what life is like inside the National Hockey League dressing room. Because I agree, like, if we're on the outside looking in, we say this guy should have been in street clothes in the press box by the second period. But maybe the bigger example, maybe the more painful thing, maybe the twist the knife into the side of a guy who has quit on your team is to have him there watching his teammates play, is sure. to have his teammates skating by and looking at him, is to have him on the bench watching the game as they get a power play in the last 2 minutes to try to win this game. I mean, maybe that's the real anguish for a guy that you assume is a competitor at the very least. So I don't know. I think it was a situation that obviously came to a head. But you know, the bottom line for Columbus is that they knew it came to a head even before that. I mean, they had been working on this trade with Winnipeg for months. They had been working on other angles to try to get Dubois out for a long time. It's just sad. You know, the big picture on this for Columbus, it's tough to have this keep happening. You know, it hasn't happened like this before. But, you know, you go back to when Rick Nash was traded to the Rangers, that was a guy who asked out. Now, granted, it was because the team had been hot garbage for his entire career, but he asked out. You know, Jeff Carter got traded there, didn't want to play there. Obviously, Panarin and Bobrovsky both let the team know that they weren't going to re-sign before the season. That was a situation that was handled internally, and everybody was on the same page with it, so that wasn't as damaging as this. But it's just a string of high-profile players in the last 15 years that have all just said, Columbus ain't for me, for various and sundry reasons. And if you're Columbus, you're just like, all right, you know, what do we got to do to keep people here? We got cool bars. We're a nice college town. You know, it's not a bad place to be. What's going on? Why don't people want to be here? And in some cases, the common denominator is torts, but you hear the players talk, and it's not necessarily all him being the reason why they want to get out.
ESPN's Greg Wyshynski here with us, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Greg, just my last thought on last Thursday night. When that game went to overtime between the Lightning and the Blue Jackets and Dubois was awkwardly sitting there on the bench, I was really hoping for an 18-round shootout to see if Dubois was going to be put out as the 18th guy. Just throwing that in there.
That would have been fun. It would have been a lot of fun.
Really would have been if Torts had put Korpisalo out there for the shootout before Dubois. Looking around the NHL, how do you feel like this new format with the new divisions realigned for one season, with the two-game sets, or even in some cases three- or four-game sets between certain teams, how do you feel like that's gone early on?
Well, it's been interesting to watch. I mean, I do TV on the Daily Wager on ESPN2 each week, and part of it is obviously trying to find the trends that we're seeing around the league. And I think what we're seeing around the league is a lot of splits of these two-game series, a lot of series where, you know, one team gets the best of a team in the first game, and then the second team comes roaring back in the second game. So you see a lot of teams that are sort of like hovering around 500 right now because of that, maybe a little bit less. You know, from a logistics standpoint, I think it's been really fascinating to see the dynamics of that all-Canadian division.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to Brendan Shanahan from the Maple Leafs the other day, and we were talking about how if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you're used to a season where on a Tuesday night you might get Florida at home, and that's a different emotional dynamic than having Montreal at home. Well, now they get Montreal at home all the time, and every other Canadian team, and all they want to do is beat the hell out of Toronto. Right? So it's like it is like a playoff game every night for some of these teams that are, you know, either at the top of the pyramid in their divisions, or are just a team that other teams want to take down a peg. So that dynamic has been really interesting. And as far as like just teams that are out of the gate in interesting ways, I mean, obviously the two that you have to start looking at in a panic mode watch are the Vancouver Canucks, who every single fear that people had about that team falling off from last season has come true, whether it's the goaltending not being able to recover from the loss of Jacob Markstrom, or the defense in front of the goaltending being horrific. Then the other team is the Rangers, who are 1-3-1 in their first five games this season, and not looking like they've taken that next step that we assumed they could take, with, you know, Lafreniere being drafted first overall, with a little bit of age on some of their younger players, with Panarin back and, you know, Shishkin in goal, like for a full season. I think there was a lot more anticipation on the Rangers being a bit better than what they've been out of the gate. Long season, let's be honest, but not exactly the most encouraging thing. And already you're hearing some rumblings of, all right, has David Quinn taken this team as far as he can, and do we have to go and maybe get that guy that elevates the Rangers to that next level as a contender?
Greg Wyshynski, senior writer for ESPN and ESPN.com. Greg, thank you as always for your time, and continue enjoying this hockey.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff as usual from Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. You can check out his work at ESPN.com. And thanks as always to Robbie Stanley of NHL.com for joining me here on Preds Insiders as well. As a reminder, the Preds and Blackhawks tomorrow, puck drop 7 o'clock with our pregame coverage starting at 6 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And then Wednesday, pregame at a special time of 5:30 with faceoff at 6:30, as it is a nationally televised game here in Smashville between the Preds and the Blackhawks here coming up the next two nights. If you want to be in the arena Wednesday night for that game that starts at 6:30, you'll want to tune in tomorrow in the 8 a.m., 12 p.m., and 4 p.m. hours. We will be playing a cue to call in those hours, and we'll have three different winners going to that game Wednesday night between the Preds and the Hawks. That's all we have here this evening on Preds Insiders. Thanks for listening right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.